Hey there, welcome to the Student to CEO podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Mason. We're talking to entrepreneurs who launched their business at a young age and they're now killing the game. Tune in to our episodes as these guests spill the dirt on taking that leap into entrepreneurship just like they did. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Student to CEO podcast. I'm thrilled to have Emma Rose Cohen joining us today. Emma Rose Cohen is the CEO and founder of Final, the company that created Final Straw, the world's first reusable, collapsible straw that raised nearly $2 million on Kickstarter. Prior to launching Final, Emma earned a master's degree from Harvard in environmental management and sustainability and spent 4 years working in waste minimization at Los Alamos National Laboratory. In the last decade, Emma's passion for sustainability motivated her to create a nonprofit called Save the Mermaids to educate children about the harmful effects of single-use plastics. Emma has also spoken about the harmful effects plastic straws have on the environment on the TEDx stage and in numerous podcasts. Emma, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Awesome. I'd love if you could start off by sharing with our audience your story and how you got started.
Sure. So, I mean, I guess it depends how far back you want me to go, but I really got interested in sustainability in college. I went to school at UCSB in Santa Barbara. And, you know, I was there studying neuroscience and just like, you know, so eager to go out in the world and leave my mark and make it a better place. And yet on the weekends, it was like I was partying and using red Solo cups and just being really wasteful. And so it kind of just hit me that, you know, my purpose of what I was doing there and my actions didn't align and that didn't feel good. And so I wanted to do something about it. So my girlfriends and I, we just so happened to have mermaid outfits. And so we dressed up in them and did a beach cleanup. And it was so fun. And by the end, like everyone on the beach was helping us. And it was just this big, really fun, sparkly beach cleanup party. And so that's kind of where I realized that sustainability doesn't have to be crunchy granola, boring, and you know, unengaging. It can actually be fun, exciting, and sexy and sparkly. And so that's kind of where the brand voice for Final was really established. And I started to realize that the way you tell a message is so important in how people want to bring it into their lives. And so this is just a story that I really like telling. I think it's really important that, you know, we increase our awareness as a society. And so why not do it in a fun and engaging way?
That's awesome. And I love the fact that, as you mentioned, you made the beach cleanup fun by bringing in your friends and also dressing in mermaid costumes that made people want to engage and interact with the cleanup as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And so from there, what led you to want to actually start Final?
So after that, I went and was looking for a job in sustainability and ended up at Los Alamos National Laboratory and then also did my master's in sustainability. And, you know, I loved my experience at the lab, but government work really isn't suited for a mermaid. So I was done there and was just going to go up to Whistler and be a ski bum and kind of figure out my next move. I'd saved up a little money and was just going to eat ramen forever and ski. But then I started working on Final as like a side project. I knew that Seattle was banning straws in January of 2018. And I'd always been really interested in design and solving problems through better design. And so it was just kind of like a fun side project. And then, of course, the way, you know, I work, I just got fully obsessed with it and started really working on building the community around it and got the Instagram following up to like 10,000 followers just by posting silly environmental memes. And then... yeah, it launched on Kickstarter in April of 2018 and it exploded and it's been a wild ride ever since.
I love that you mentioned that it became something that was a fun side project for you, because that's one thing that I've noticed with so many other successful businesses is that when people closely tie something they're passionate about to monetizing it, that's when it ends up getting that success, because you truly care about the mission, the company, and its overall goals. So I think that's awesome that you took something that you really cared about and was near and dear to your heart, but found a way to make an impact through it.
Totally. I mean, when you're an entrepreneur, like you have to be so passionate about what you're doing because it's late nights, long hours, you know, so many fails and obstacles that if you don't love what you're doing on such a deep level, probably will just end up giving up. And so, you know, it's so important for me to, you know, have this company and to be making this impact and to be solving these problems, because there aren't a ton of companies out there that are really diving into how we design products. Are we designing things to last forever? Are we designing things to replace single use and really shift the way that we consume on a daily basis?
Right. Exactly. And I know you mentioned that one of the things that you focused on before launching your Kickstarter was building that community and growing your Instagram account to 10,000 followers by posting those funny environmental memes. Was there anything else that you did that you think really stood out with building a community? Because I know that that's something a lot of entrepreneurs are really passionate about, is just getting people who fully believe in themselves and their mission. So what would you say are other contributing factors to being able to grow that highly engaged audience?
Yeah, I think, you know, ultimately people want to share content that they relate to on a personal level. So that's really what I focused on, is creating shareable content. And so you really are able to focus on organic growth when your fans are the one promoting you versus having to invest all the money in advertising. So beyond doing, you know, a lot of work on the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we also did a Viral Loops email collection campaign. And so what that is basically, you know, we have a landing page that says, you know, sign up to be the first to know about Final Straw when it launches. And then once people sign up, then we give them an option to share it with their friends. And then, you know, there's like a tiered reward system. So if you share it with one friend, you get 10% off your Final Straw and you know, so on to like sharing with 20 or something friends, and then you get a free one. So by incentivizing sharing, you're able to collect a lot of information on people who are actually interested in the product that you're creating without having to put in a ton of money.
I think that's a great point. And especially if these people are sharing with others who also have the same passion for the environment and sustainability and all of that stuff, then it's a win-win situation, because they're sharing with friends about a product that they believe in, but Final is getting seen in front of people who are actually a part of their ideal customer base.
Exactly.
And with your Kickstarter campaign, because you had reached an incredible $2 million, do you think that email campaign that you did and the social media growth that allowed you to raise that capital, or were there other things too that contributed to it?
Yeah. So, you know, the trend on how many Final Straws that we sold over time during the campaign was really correlated to the initial boost. And, you know, when we clicked go on that campaign at like 1 a.m. or something, and then I bought the first straw, within minutes we had a sale and then another sale. And that was because of the email campaign. So we'd collected about 4,000 emails through that. And as soon as the campaign went live, every single person on that email list was notified. And so people started buying it immediately. You know, then we're promoting it through social media. We also had a couple news agencies like BuzzFeed, ATTN, Now This, that then did stories on it because of that initial success. And it was such a, you know, timely product in that the world was so hyper-focused on single-use plastic straws. And yet at the same time, there were no portable travel solutions. So you go on Amazon back in 2018 and type in reusable straw, and all you're going to see is, you know, a metal straw, a glass straw, or a bamboo straw that are, you know, super big, bulky, you know, can be dangerous. The metal straws, you know, poke you, and the glass straws break, and then the bamboo straws get kind of moldy and smell weird. And so, you know, there's just this huge gap in the market, and our timing was just impeccable. And then, you know, but with the BuzzFeed video, that went viral, and then the campaign went viral. And so it just like, it completely exploded, and we didn't put any money in advertising, which is, you know, unheard of pretty much, because it was so shareable and everyone was talking about straws already. And then boom, here's the only portable travel straw option.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is one of the things that I admire the most about Final is the fact that everything that you did is totally grassroots. I mean, it was all organic marketing, organic advertising, organically building this community and connecting with people that, again, as you mentioned, they wanted to really relate to this mission. It was something that they found to be shareable, and then it just spread like wildfire.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, I think it was so exciting and inspiring to see that the world really wants products like this. People are hungry for the tools that they can use to reduce their waste. And I think, you know, working in sustainability, and especially with my 4 years of the lab, like, it's so easy to just get discouraged and, you know, almost feel disheartened and apathetic in terms of like trying to promote real change. And then to have this many people affirm what I'm doing and say, like, you know, heck yeah, we love this, we want to support it. It was so exciting and just kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah, that's amazing. So knowing all of that with your journey and all that you've gone through, what was the most difficult part of starting your business?
Today, yesterday, and every day prior. No, just kidding. So, you know, I definitely would say the most challenging part of starting a business is building the team. You know, it's so hard to find the right people that share your vision, that want to work as hard as you and, you know, really build the brand. I did some really terrible hiring at the beginning because I'd never hired someone in my life, and you know, I didn't do a thorough process to really make sure that it was, you know, a culture fit and that the entire company is remote. So are these self-starters that can do their thing without going into an office and don't need micromanaging? And, you know, we've really beefed out the hiring process now, and it's like, you know, 8 steps that people have to go through, and it might even seem excessive for a small startup, but really, like, the kind of saying of hire slow, fire fast could not be more true. You know, and that was the other thing. It's like, I wouldn't fire people because I like them. And I generally just like enjoy people. And so it's really hard to fire people. It's so sad. And I hate it the most. And so I would just like put it off and put it off and put it off. And then, you know, this person's doing a job in the company and they're not doing the best job that can be done. And in an early stage startup, you really need to have people doing the best job that they can, because it's really sink or swim. So, you know, there's a ton of books out there on building teams and hiring, and definitely recommend, before you start a company, to dive into all of that, because, you know, I was very late to that game and learned a lot through the process.
I think you're absolutely right, especially because the people that you hire can either bring your business down or completely bring it up. So as you mentioned, being able to source and hire those people who are a great fit, not only for being able to take your company to that next level, but who are also a great fit for the culture itself, is so important for being able to help you reach those next steps moving forward.
100%. It's the most important thing. You know, I am not Final. The team is Final, and they are the ones who, you know, I kind of like am steering the ship, but then they're the ones keeping the ship going and keeping it floating and making sure that we don't hit an iceberg and, you know, all of these things. And you know, everyone plays such a huge and important part in that success. So I think, you know, a lot of times like CEOs are kind of looked at as like the head of it, but really, like, you know, I just hire people that are smarter than me and better at doing all these things than I am, so that I can just kind of like trust them and let them do the best work and then just be a resource for, you know, guidance and vision.
I love that you said that you hire people that are smarter than you, because that is something that I always say. And one thing that I've focused on personally too is that I always want to make sure that I'm never the smartest person in the room or in the company, because it's other people's talents, skills, experience, et cetera, who can really provide an amazing perspective or outlook on a situation that can help you to, again, keep your company growing and moving forward.
Yeah, I had an employee the other day who now has a new manager, and he was like,
yeah, she's a way better manager than you are. And I'm like, yeah, that's why I hired her.
I know, that's the whole point.
I'm not a good manager. And I think, you know, the biggest and most important thing as a CEO is to really know what you're good at and to focus on that and then hire people that are good at all the other things. Cause I'm like not detail oriented. I'm not into like, you know, task management and like, you know, I really thrive in the creative aspect of it. So, you know, if I just hired a bunch of people like me, the company would certainly fail because we would be all vision and no execution. And, you know, you can't sell vision. You have to sell what you're actually making, execution. So really a diverse team full of inspiring people that are, you know, confident enough to stand up and say things, because you definitely don't want to be in an echo chamber, and that will really add thoughtful comments, suggestions, and concerns to the dialogue.
Yeah, I think you completely hit the nail on the head with that. So now, kind of keeping in mind that hiring and building your team has been one of the most difficult parts of starting your business, what has been the most rewarding?
It's a combination of things. First off, so we actually, like, right before I started talking to you, got a package with all of these new samples of everything that we've been working on. So getting the, you know, from vision to ideation to refinement to first samples is such a challenging and exciting time of making these new products. But like to get it in my hand is such a cool feeling. It's like, oh my gosh, this was just like a crazy idea I had, and now it's like a physical thing in my hand. It's so exciting. And so that's kind of like my personal bit. And then the second thing is just the customers and the community that we've created, hearing their feedback. We have a Slack channel for wins. And so we are posting, you know, customer comments and stuff that people are saying about the brand and the products. And, you know, it's so cool to reach people all over the world. We've sold Final Straws in over 100 countries, and it just blows my mind that someone in Burkina Faso has a Final Straw and is like spreading their mission there. And, you know, to hear these kind of personalized stories of a kid who brought his Final Straw to show and tell, and then all the kids at school stopped using plastic straws. You know, it's these little emails that we get. I think people, it's so amazing, because I rarely like email companies with stories like that. And now I should do that more, because it flows up the chain. And when I hear these stories, I'm just like, oh yes, this is why we're doing what we're doing. Like, people care about it. People are motivated by it, and it's spreading by word of mouth. Like, we all have such powerful voices and such an incredible ability to create a ripple effect in our community. And we hope that, you know, Final Straw kind of is one of those pillars that people use to help spread the message.
You're absolutely right, especially because I can say from my own experience where I went to college, they were really focused on sustainability as well. So we had refillable water bottle stations. We had kind of like these green to-go containers from the food courts and things like that, where we'd be able to kind of get our meals and stuff to go and really focus on recycling that way. And one thing that I personally saw around campus a lot was people having Final Straws. And so when you kind of instill this notion in organizations about the whole importance of sustainability and environmentalism and all of that awesome stuff, it can really, as you mentioned, bring that ripple effect, and then more and more people are interested by it and participating it and showing that love that they have for it, just like they have to you.
Totally. I mean, humans just mirror our environment. So if you surround yourself with people that care and that are trying to make an impact, like, it's going to have an effect on you. And so, you know, I always encourage people to use their voice, spread the mission in a kind and inviting way. You don't want to be like finger wagging at your friends who are not doing it right. Instead, lead by example and show the alternative. So, you know, I was recently hanging out with some friends that were using a bunch of paper towels, and which I don't use personally. And so, you know, I pulled out a bunch of rags and I was like, hey guys, look, here's a way more sustainable alternative, you know, so much better for the earth, and it's really easy. And then it's kind of like, oh, okay, like, there we go. The facts are that paper towels use, you know, hundreds of thousands of gallons of water. They're made from trees. They cannot be recycled. And if they go to a landfill, they anaerobically digest, which creates methane, which is a very potent CO2 gas, or sorry, greenhouse gas. And so, you know, by providing the facts, showing an alternative and leading by example, my friends changed their behavior. And that's really what I've learned over the years. Because, you know, I used to be the like plastic Nazi, and my friends were like terrified that I was just gonna, like, berate them for using plastic. And that's not, you don't want people to change their behavior out of fear. You want to do it. You want them to create a value. And that creates lasting behavior change versus fear-based change.
I love that. And so, kind of keeping in mind all of the success that you've had over the past few years with Final, what do you think actually led to that success beyond what we've already discussed?
So I think it's, you know, a few things. First off, brand voice. It's really relatable. You know, it's how I talk to my friends. It's funny. It's engaging. It's different. Most companies that are promoting sustainability are like, kind of have the same voice. They're doing the same sort of videos with, like, you know, save the oceans and this kind of like Sarah McLachlan like music. And it's like, I don't know, for me, that doesn't really like hit, like pull on my heartstrings the same way a funny, relatable, but yet inspiring video would. So I would say brand voice is a huge one. Second is, design. I mean, we make everything super sexy. All of the products that we make are beautiful, I think, and really design forward and then also convenient. And so by replacing single use items with things that actually feel better, you activate the reward system in your brain. So just like, you know, eating a piece of cake, activates that same kind of reward system. When you pull out a Final straw, it feels good. It makes that sound when it clinks together. And then it's just feels so much more sturdy and solid than a plastic one. So we're actually reinforcing behavior through that. And then I think also the community, we really are very encouraging, and it's not about, you know, having 100 people living perfectly zero waste. It's about having millions of people trying. And so that's kind of the attitude that we have of how do we encourage people to continue taking these steps towards living more sustainably, because it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to happen over time. And by, you know, working our way down this path together, there's going to be much more, you know, impactful change than trying to be perfect all at once.
Absolutely. And I love that the first thing that you had mentioned was your brand voice, especially because that's one thing that I think a lot of people don't actually take too much into consideration. I mean, of course, people think about the values, tone, voice that they want their brand to focus on, but not many people realize just how much of an impact it can make on a company. And so, as you said, by using a voice for Final that's engaging, really funny, relatable, inspirational, things like that, that's what draws people in and makes them want to learn more about Final. And then they're therefore drawn to your products and wanting to find a way to make their impact by basically focusing more on sustainability themselves in any way that they can.
Totally.
Awesome. So in these past few years, if there was one thing you wish you did differently or one thing you know now that you wish you knew then, what would it be and why?
Oh my gosh. So many things. Geez, where do I start? I mean, I already mentioned hiring, and that really is the most important thing. But beyond that, I guess I would say testing. You know, we have put products out. Well, I think the V2 straw, when we first released it, had quite a few issues with it because we didn't do thorough, quality control and testing on it. So that was a huge lesson in, you know, not just trusting people's word, but actually, you know, testing it on our side and verifying what people are saying is true in terms of like a manufacturer. I think that really, I guess my biggest thing that I've learned is to trust my gut. I feel like when you start, and this is my first company, I've never started a company before. So it's like there's a lot of moments where I'm like, I have no freaking clue what I'm doing. And then you're getting advice from a million people who are so sure that they're right. And not everyone's right when they give advice. So I listen to all of the advice and I try and dissect it and analyze it and dive into my gut and say, does this ring really true to me and what we're doing as a company? And so, you know, with that, surrounding yourself with people that you do trust and that give really good advice and that have been through it before and can really help guide you. Ultimately, like, you know, the success of a business is hard work, luck, and the people you surround yourself with. So be very careful who those people are. Make sure you trust them on a deep level and that you know that they always have your back no matter what.
All very good points, especially because intuition is something that, again, I think a lot of business owners don't always focus on as much. I mean, I can personally say that anytime I felt a certain way about maybe I shouldn't be taking on a certain project or I shouldn't be working with a certain client, but then I go ahead and actually do those, it ends up being a disaster. And so it's made me realize over the past few years that anytime I get that feeling, I just need to trust it, even though I may be inclined to take the opposite direction with it. It's so important to know what's right for you in your business. And I love the point that you made too, that you said that anyone and everyone will have an opinion on what you should do, but being able to surround yourself with the people who actually know what's best for you and have your best interests at heart, and then being able for you to make that decision yourself is so important.
Totally. And I mean, even when people have your best interests in mind, they may not deeply understand like why you're doing what you're doing. So I love having lots of contrarians in the room, because I think a lot of times when people, you know, tell you you shouldn't do something or disagree with you, you know, I always try and listen with a really open mind. But then it's like, if they say that, and it, sometimes it will make me even more sure that I'm doing the right thing. So that's really good to have. And, you know, I believe that the intuition is a connection to the higher power and something bigger than myself. So I really do value those moments where I get that voice that kind of is like, no, like you're on the right path, like keep blazing ahead and, or whatever it's saying, and to create stillness in order to hear the voice. Because I think sometimes it's so easy to get wrapped up and feel busy and overwhelmed and all of these things. And then, so just to take a moment and listen to yourself, listen to your gut and sit with that is so important.
You're exactly right. And especially kind of going along those lines, what I always say too is that no one knows your business as well as you do.
Exactly. And no one ever will, no matter what.
Very true. So being able to listen to what you think is best and go ahead and act upon that will end up doing wonders moving forward.
And no one will ever care as much as the founders. You can bring people on who care a ton, but like ultimately, like it's your baby. And so, you know, definitely trying to find people that care close to the amount that you do, but also just know, like it will always be your baby.
100%. So Emma, kind of following along with all of this awesome advice that you've talked about and given to our listeners, why do you think it's so important for individuals to start a business at a young age specifically?
Well, you know, most entrepreneurs have been entrepreneurs from a very young age. You know, I never considered myself an entrepreneur. You know, I always had random hustles. Like the first time I ever made money, I was like 7 years old, and my sister and I went around the neighborhood and collected all of the fallen fruit from our neighbor's trees and then went and sold it at the farmer's market. And so I think you just like learn from a really young age when you know, things aren't just kind of handed to you. First, like the value of a dollar, the value of hard work. And then you just get really creative about solving problems and making money by doing that. Every entrepreneur I talk to, I love to ask them how the first time they made money is, because it's always some ridiculous story about how they were kids, you know, like slanging the randomest things, you know, whether it's like chocolate bars door to door or like, you know, raking lawns. But I think you just learn so much at a young age around, you know, marketing and sales and all of these different aspects of running a business that become so important when you get older. So also, I think everyone should work in a restaurant for a little while. That really is a humbling experience. And it's something that I think would really shift the way people treat each other if everyone had that experience. But yeah, I think just following your passion, following what excites you. And then, you know, through having all of those random odd jobs, you also find out what you don't want, which is sometimes equally as important. You know, through getting my EMT and working in a hospital, I realized like, oh my gosh, I'd never want to work in a hospital. Like I hate hospitals. And I was pre-med, and it was like, whoa, what am I doing? Like, why would I finish and you know, this pre-med track and then go to med school when I loathe being in a hospital. So, you know, you got to dip your toe into all the things and taste it all and really find what fits and what excites you and what fires you up, because that's going to be your life. So you better like it.
Yes. And I love the point that you made about just being able to dip your toes into all these different things, because as you said, that's how you find out what you really are passionate the most about and what you're really not so passionate about. And then that way you're able to focus on the things that really light you up and excite you. And I have to say that your point about working in the restaurant industry is so true. I worked in a coffee shop for, I think, almost 5 years. And I mean, just the experiences that I had there, from handling customers to working with other people and managing teamwork that way to focusing on the operations aspect. I mean, so many valuable things that you learn from that area specifically that have now been carried over into my business, which is the complete opposite of working in a coffee shop is. But it provides a ton of great life experience and value.
Yeah, it's really hard to see at the time. Like you're working in the coffee shop and you're like, how could this contribute to my life in some meaningful way? And then now it's like, you look back on it and you're like, oh my gosh, that's what made me who I am now. Every single one of those experiences and like, you know, the jerk customer that I talked to, but like I kept my cool. And like, so now I can talk with difficult clients. Like all of these experiences are so formidable in making us, you know, the people who we are. And so I think it's challenging to see that during the moment, but then to reflect on it, it gives me so much appreciation for all those jobs I had in the past.
You're absolutely right. And I know that there are some people too, who while they're building their business, they need to kind of take on these side gigs to be able to kind of support themselves throughout the process. And I think that instead of dreading these side gigs as something that they have to do, I think it's so important to shift your mindset on it and say, what can I learn today that can help me to continue to grow my business moving forward? Because just as you said, I mean, there's so many awesome experiences and learning points that can come out of it that will help you to shape your business even better than it already is.
You nailed it 100%.
So Emma, since you already shared so much awesome advice and tips with our listeners, if there was one thing that you could leave them with, what would it be for someone who may just be starting?
Stay true to your voice. Stay true to who you are. Don't market products or services to the masses. Really dial down who you want your customer to be. If that's you, great. Because it's really easy then to kind of structure and build things that you love. I think a lot of people make the mistake of trying to make something that everyone will love, and then it loses authenticity and it just feels like bleh. And it doesn't have this kind of like distinct edge. The brands that I really look up to and value, you know, they are so true to their voice, to their aesthetic, to what they're doing. And it's just, they just repeat that same thing over and over in slightly different packages. And so it feels real and authentic. And so I think that's really important. Don't market things to the masses. Make it for a select few people who will love it, who will scream from the rooftops about what you're doing and really champion that, you know, and that's what's really important. You need this kind of like cult following in order to create something big, because you don't want to fall somewhere in the middle. You don't want people to be like, oh yeah, Final, like it's whatever. You either want people to be like, I love Final, I'm obsessed, or it's like, I hate Final, it's so dumb. Because strong reactions are important, and hate is another form of love. The opposite of love is indifference. So if you fall in the middle, you're going to have people who are indifferent to what you're doing. And that's the worst, because you could disappear and no one would ever know. And that's really the opposite of what you want.
I love that advice that you give, especially because I can fully relate to when I was starting my business. I was like, I need to be reaching every single entrepreneur in every single space, every single location, because I just wanted to try to connect with more people and therefore make more money. But I soon realized that as soon as I started to connect with people who weren't really a part of my dream client base, they ended up being the people who were headaches. I didn't enjoy their projects. I found the work to be boring. I really wasn't fully invested, so on and so forth. But I realized that once I kind of niched down and stuck to a group that I was really passionate about and was really excited to serve, that's when I started to get the clients who I absolutely appreciated, who I loved working with, whose projects and businesses excited me, things like that. And so I think that your advice is so on point and solid with the fact that the more you narrow down, the better people you have the opportunity to work with and serve.
Seems like we've had a lot of similar experiences.
It does. Awesome. Well, Emma, this has been such an awesome episode, and I know that our listeners will find so much value in the advice that you've shared and the tips that you've given. And now I'd love if you could share where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Sure. So our website is final.co. And you can find us on social media if you like silly memes, which I hope you do. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Final Straw. We also have some really exciting new products coming up. So we've got Final Fork, Final Spork launching soon, which is a similar concept as Final Straw. It's a collapsible, reusable fork or spork that is so sexy. And I'm so excited to launch it really soon. And we also have Final Wipe available for pre-order right now. And that is located on Indiegogo along with Final Fork and Final Spork. And that is a reusable wipe that can be used dry and replace paper towels, paper napkins, or even toilet paper with number one or a bidet. And when you add in our non-toxic sanitizing solution, it can replace sanitizing wipes.
Fabulous. I'll make sure to put all of those links in the show notes as well, so that way people can click them in case they missed it.
Perfect.
Awesome. Thanks again for coming on, Emma.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. That was fun.
Thanks so much for listening today. I'd love it if you could subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with those who could use it most. For show notes and more information, go to studenttoceo.com/podcast.